Today, on this episode of the PeerDirect Special Spotlight.
It had not been a successful strategy, despite attempts in small cell lung cancer, until we get to this year's ASCO meeting, where we saw the data from the INFORTE trial.
Today, Dr. Sabari and Szczesinski joined the podcast to discuss maintenance therapy strategies in small cell lung cancer in this PeerDirect Special Spotlight. All opinions expressed are those of the presenters and do not necessarily reflect the views of this educational initiative's supporters.
Hello, I'm Dr. Joshua Sabari, a thoracic medical oncologist and an assistant professor of medicine at New York University Grossman School of Medicine in New York.
And I'm Dr. Mark Szczesinski, a thoracic medical oncologist and executive medical director of the Advent Health Cancer Institute in Orlando, Florida.
Thank you for joining me, Mark.
My pleasure, Josh.
So in treating patients with small cell lung cancer, particularly those with extensive stage disease, where the disease is often widespread at diagnosis, maintenance therapy aims to prolong remission following initial response to chemotherapy. This strategy is inspired by the aggressive biology and rapid recurrence seen in small cell lung cancer. So Mark, let's review some of the maintenance regimens we use.
Sounds good. So PD-1 and PD-L1 inhibitors are used concurrently with first-line platinum-based chemotherapy. Several years ago, we saw the results of two pivotal trials, IMpower 133 and the Caspian trial, using two of the PD-L1 inhibitors, atezolizumab in IMpower 133 and durvalumab in the Caspian trial. And these two trials were, they grafted these PD-L1 agents onto the standard platinum etoposide treatment regimen. And they were remarkably consistent. Hazard ratio for overall survival in the 0.7 to 0.75 range or so. Changed practice at that time. They were continued as maintenance therapy, and really did make the outcomes better. Was it a home run? I don't know if it was a home run, but certainly after a long drought where platinum etoposide was our standard of care with a median survival typically of north or south of about 10 months or so, we saw a 2 to 3 month improvement. And again, about a 20 to 25% reduction in overall death and in recurrence as a result of these agents. Now, maintenance therapy, again, if you have effective agents in the second line setting, you know, if we go back to the story of non-small cell, we move those effective second line agents up to right after first-line induction therapy, called it maintenance therapy. If it was a different agent, we called it switch. If it was an agent part of the original four cycles, we called it continuation maintenance. But in non-small cell, that was a successful strategy back in the day. It had not been a successful strategy, despite attempts in small cell lung cancer, until we get to this year's ASCO meeting, where we saw the data from the INFORTE trial, which took lurbinectedin, a transcription inhibitor that is approved in the second line setting. And again, as an approved agent in the second line setting, why not move it up into maintenance setting? So you make sure that patients get the effective drug. Now, we've known if you wait for second-line therapy, there's a huge drop-off, 30 to 50% of patients in the National Cancer Database with extensive stage small cell don't get second-line treatment. Stuff happens. You know, they have a disease complication, some other complication, where they aren't fit enough to get next line of therapy. So let's take that next line of therapy, move it up, after first line, insensitive patients that respond or don't progress on first line treatment, and give those patients the benefit. And what we saw with the INFORTE trial at this meeting was that is a successful strategy and significantly improved the overall survival as well as PFS.
Yeah, Mark, you know, you and I treat a lot of small cell lung cancer patients, right? So we understand that chemotherapy is an effective strategy in this patient population. Response rates north of 80%. You mentioned the IMpower 133 and the Caspian study where we added, you know, immunotherapy, PD-L1 inhibitors, atezolizumab and durvalumab. You mentioned we grafted it onto the backbone of chemotherapy. You know, how satisfied are you with that? I mean, we are improving survival, but I'll tell you, most of my patients are still progressing after two or three cycles of maintenance. So I think the IM4T data really solidifies the fact that having chemo in a fit population and adding that to the atezolizumab maintenance could be something practice changing.
Yeah, no, I agree. Like I said before, I viewed the IMpower 133 Caspian data as not a home run. You know, it wasn't better after a long drought. Maybe a stand-up double at second base.
We'll take it.
Okay, that's right. But we obviously needed to continue the improvements. And I think what you and I both agree on is that this IMforte data with lurbinectin in it as a kind of switch maintenance, if you will, is another step forward.
Yeah, I could agree more.
Yeah. We have other agents that have been looked at in the or thought of in the maintenance setting, the PARP inhibitors, mixed results, some benefit when particularly compared with temozolomide, but still early, no firm role yet in maintenance. What are your thoughts about the PARP inhibitors?
And so I've used PARP inhibitors and temozolomide off-label in the maintenance setting, and I found it to be finicky. I think in certain subsets of patients, you know, maybe there is a benefit for this, but by and large, this has not been an effective maintenance strategy, in my opinion.
Yeah. Tarlatamab, we saw practice-changing data in the second-line setting. Again, the theme is if it works in second-line, let's move it up into either maintenance or first-line treatment. I would consider in the first-line setting, it's investigational at point. There are ongoing clinical trials at this point. But I think most of us, and I'd like your opinion, most of us are pretty excited about this moving into first line.
Yeah, so already being studied in the maintenance setting and you know, the data early on looking very exciting and promising. But as you mentioned, right, successful therapies will move earlier and earlier on to our patients, right? We want to benefit the most number of people that we can. And there are also frontline trials ongoing right now with tarlatamab. So, you know, I guess, again, going back to Monday morning in your clinic, I mean, what are you doing with the patient in front of you who has extensive stage small cell lung cancer, who's had four cycles of carboplatin, etoposide, and atezolizumab? Are you following the label? Are you using tarlatamab off-label? Are you giving, you know, maintenance, lurbinectin? What are you going to do?
I think the first thing I'm going to do is to say there's hope that we have new strategies with existing drugs that are currently approved, and how we use them provides a better outcome for you. So hope is an important thing to convey to patients. So I think that's one of the messages coming out of ASCO this year is in small cell, which has been a pretty dismal disease historically, at least we have some new strategies with new agents that improve the outcomes. I think in my practice, Josh, I think I'm going to follow the data. I'm going to offer patients lurbinectin as maintenance in combination with atezo. I'm going to follow them closely. When they progress, I'm going to transition them to tarlatamab based on the data, and hopefully try to get in what essentially would be almost three lines of therapy, right? First line, maintenance, I'll call early second line, and then whether you call this second or third line with tarlatamab. The data was pretty impressive from that particular trial. So I think, again, getting back to my statement on hope, that is one of the messages I think we need to get out there.
Yeah, so hope is critical, and I couldn't have said it better myself. You know, Mark, where does radiation fall into this space? We used to do consolidation radiation in the maintenance setting to the chest, for example. We also used to do prophylactic cranial radiation. How are you thinking about these in your patients in the current era of all these successful therapeutics that we now have?
Yeah, in extensive stage disease, you know, I think we had an early trial from the ERT that suggested the benefit. There were multiple issues with regard to the design of that trial. We, from Japanese investigators, were provided a much more rigidly controlled trial that didn't show a benefit of PCI in the extensive stage disease. So what I've gone to in my practice is close surveillance of the CNS in early treatment of brain metastases when they occur. With regard to thoracic radiation, I do think that there is a subset of patients with extensive stage disease. We have the Slotman trial that was published several years ago, looking at the role of thoracic radiotherapy in extensive stage disease. It suggested a two-year benefit. However, to me, you know, most of the patients didn't seem to benefit, but there's that little tail on the curve that was different, which reminded me of a trial probably done when you were still in grade school, Josh. But Jeremek published in 1999 a trial of the role of thoracic radiotherapy with PCI in extensive stage disease. And what he did is look at different subsets of patients. And the one subset of patients were patients who either had a complete response in the chest and complete response outside the chest, or complete response in the chest and partial response outside the chest, that very chemosensitive group. And they seemed to have a benefit for adding thoracic radiotherapy. Adding thoracic radiotherapy is... not very toxic. It's single agent radiotherapy to the chest, to mostly the mediastinum. And so, there's very little downside for doing that. Having said that, I encourage patients to see the radiation oncologist to have that discussion. Some patients, I recommend it. Some patients, I'm on the fence about it. I want them to talk to the thoracic radiotherapy. But I do think an extensive stage disease, when I don't necessarily think a role of PCI is there, I do think in selected patients, thoracic radiotherapy can potentially be beneficial. I don't know how you feel.
Yeah, first off, I was in high school, but totally agree with you. You know, I don't think any role for PCI in the extensive stage setting. I do monitor patients closely, but I do agree with that point that for consolidation chest radiation, it is important in some patients, particularly patients with, you know, really robust responses and no extra thoracic disease. Very tough, though, to administer this in the setting of maintenance immunotherapy, particularly with the concerns for, you know, interstitial lung disease, pneumonitis. Well, thank you, Mark, for that great discussion of the maintenance strategies in small cell lung cancer. You know, as we talked about, checkpoint inhibitors have really shifted the landscape, with maintenance immunotherapy now standard for extensive stage small cell lung cancer, while other maintenance strategies remain experimental or selective patient populations.
Yeah, I completely agree, Josh. You know, in addition, we know that each patient is an individual. We have to individualize treatment, considering things like performance status, risk of toxicity, CNS involvement, these sorts of things. And of course, at the end of the day, we've seen this great data because patients enrolled in clinical trials. And so we need to continue to encourage patients to participate and for doctors to spend the time it takes to get patients. So we advance these maintenance strategies in this aggressive disease. So thanks, Josh. And thank you to our audience for watching.
And that's today's Specialist Spotlight. Thank you for joining us for this episode of PureDirect Medical News Podcast. For more stories like these, visit us at PureDirect.com. Thoughts, comments, or suggestions? Please leave us a review on your preferred listening platform or email us at editorial@PureDirect.com. Subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Pandora, Apple Podcast, or TuneIn. You can also download our Amazon Alexa Flash Briefing, Medical News Roundup, and just ask, "What's my Flash Briefing?" Thanks today to our guests, Dr. Sabari and Szczesinski. Join me next time for an episode where we cover the latest stories in the world of medicine.